Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW, 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can make this earth a better place. During this second hour, I have a fascinating gentleman in the studio named Gene Savoy Jr. I'll be interviewing him. He's the president of Cosology International and Jamilian University of the Ordained. He presides also over the World Council for Human Spiritual Rights, and he's dedicated to leading a new global spiritual movement that encompasses all faiths, religions, and traditions, based upon the universal system of what he called cosology and the and sacred teachings of life. His website is www.cosology.org. He believes that we're all light bodies, and he believes the entire planet is ascending into the higher dimension and that we also have a beautiful and bright future. His father was a famous fellow as well named Gene Savoy Sr., was a famous American explorer and religious leader, and we'll be going into to him in just a few minutes. But before we start the interview, I'd like to say some prayers for Fukushima, as well as the events in Syria and tragic events in Syria, and also the bombing in Stockholm, Sweden today, which is also tragic. As you know, Fukushima is a potentially extinction-level event that happened now back on March 11th, March 3rd, I believe it was, yeah, March March 3rd, or around that area, March of 2011, that is being mostly ignored by the media here in the United States, other countries. Although we've had some help from off-planet, the Galactic Alliance has stepped in and cleaned up some of the radioactive pollution at Fukushima. They can't do it all by themselves, and they've told me repeatedly that they do need our energy and help through prayers to clean up Fukushima and the Pacific Ocean. So as I do every week, I'd like to ask everyone listening today to say a few prayers with me to help clean up Fukushima. With that, I'd like to say ask everyone to say these prayers with me now. Just repeat after me three times. Water, we're sorry.
Sorry.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we thank you.
And water, we love you.
Water, we love you.
And we'll say it twice more. Water, we are sorry.
Water, we are sorry.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we thank you.
And water, we love you.
Water, we love you.
And one more time. Water, we are sorry.
Water, we are sorry.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we thank you.
And water, we love you.
Water, we love you.
Thank you, Gene, for joining me in that prayer.
You're welcome.
That was a favorite prayer by Dr. Masaru Emoto before he passed away, and it's based upon the Ho'oponopono. I hope I pronounced that correctly. It's an Hawaiian healing prayer. And before he passed away in 2014, Dr. Emoto discovered that, for example, if you write the words love and gratitude on a bottle of radioactive water and paste beautiful love and gratitude water crystals on that same bottle of radioactive water, that all the radiation would disappear within 48 hours. And it's that simple. With our thoughts, we can clean up Fukushima. I know Fukushima is a problem, but you know, I think many of the world's governments, they don't know what to do. And so, but as powerful spiritual beings, with the help of the Supreme Being, I know we can clean up Fukushima. So I want to tell everyone to do that. To please repeat that every day. Of course, as well, on my drive up to the studio this morning, I learned that there was a terrific bombing in Stockholm, Sweden. Where people were undoubtedly hurt, and also, too, a tragic gas attack and also a cruise missile strike ordered by President Trump. This is an escalation of a very explosive situation over in Syria, and I think that there are some negative forces who are doing their best to try to get the United States and Russia involved in a potential very, very serious war in that area, and I hope. And that's why today I want to ask everyone around the world listening today to send lots of love and light to the people and the victims of not only in Stockholm, Sweden, but also in Syria as well, because I don't think anyone wants to see the world engulfed in a war. It's very unfortunate that the tragic events have happened there in Syria and Stockholm, and I hope that peace will prevail, and that healing can be done. And with that, I'd like to introduce my next guest, Gene Savoy of Cosology.org. Gene, hi, welcome to Out of This World Radio.
Ted, thank you for having me on the program. It's great to be up here in the state of Washington. It's very wet.
It's very wet. We've had the wettest winter, I think, in 150 years of record keeping.
Well, we are located and headquartered in northern Nevada in Reno, which is very close to Lake Tahoe, a lot of mountains, and we have had a record winter. Since they started keeping records, we've broken all the records for winter up in the Sierra Nevada.
Really, in terms of temperature or precipitation?
Snowfall and rainfall.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Being one of the driest states in the country, it's welcome
to us. That's good. I'd like to back up a little bit to your dad first, and then I'll lead into your current work. Would you do wonderful work? Your dad passed away in 2007, and he was a wonderful archaeologist of the 20th century. He discovered 43 lost cities in the jungles of South America and connected his discoveries with others in the Middle East. He found that many of the ancient civilizations in South America actually used light, this sun gazing, but also more than that, he found that we were all light beings, and that in a way this is kind of returning to our origins as the planet goes into the higher and higher dimensions. Could you tell me a little bit about your dad, Gene? He sounds like a fascinating fellow.
He was a fascinating man, and I don't say that merely because he was my father. He was a child of the Great Depression. He was actually born in Bellingham, Washington. And after the Second World War, he decided to pursue a life of spirituality and religion, which first led him into the arms of the Catholic Church, where he went to the University of Portland. Mm-hmm. And after a period of study, about 2 years worth, he and his mentor, Father Delaney, that perhaps the Catholic Church was not the best place for him. Mm-hmm. And so he reluctantly left his studies at the University of Portland and embarked on a quest, really a journey of spiritual understanding and learning the truth, as I think many people are inclined to do. And eventually over time that led him to to South America, where he became a preeminent explorer. He was not licensed or he did not have a degree in archaeology per se, mm-hmm. But he was privileged to study with a lot of the friars and the monks of the church who had the chronicles, the old chronicles that the Spaniards had written during the conquest that were 500 years old. And very similarly to the English language, the Spanish language has changed significantly over 500 years. And the priests and the historians that he was able to associate with were able to guide him in the translations of these places. A lot of the places that he discovered were fabled, but no one had ever found them. Mm-hmm. But he believed that they existed, and he was able to actually find them, which was actually quite amazing.
Now, I have to tell you, Gene, what did your dad find when he found these lost cities?
Well, I think besides finding the actual physical remains of great civilizations, which the Americas were known for, the Spaniards were quite amazed when they went to places like Peru or Mexico to see the sizes of their cities, to see how cultured they really were. Mm-hmm. They rivaled anything really in Europe, the size of their cities, except that everything was clean, unlike Europe. Mm-hmm. What he found was really more of a knowledge. He was able to tap into energetic fields, mm-hmm. and almost go back into the past of how these people were thinking, what their life was like, and things were not quite as materialistic, I think, as they are today. Mm-hmm. In those days, I mean, of course, people had to eat and build shelter and so on and so forth. And mm-hmm. let's not get the idea that this was an entirely peaceful continent. The mm-hmm. Spaniards, when they arrived in Peru, encountered the empire in the midst of a civil war, did not bode well for them either.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
So your dad was able to travel into the past.
I believe he did. He was able to travel into the past. He was able to garner information from the energetic fields, as I said, in those ancient places. But a lot of his work was not merely in dealing with the past. He was curious and interested about it.
Mm-hmm.
He believed that we must understand our past,
mm-hmm.
but project ourselves into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really his life's work, was projecting into the future and what was going to happen, for instance, in today's world and beyond.
Huh, that's fascinating, fascinating. Now, I did quite a bit of research before coming on the air today so I could ask you some intelligent questions. And one of the things that I ran across, there was a book, I'm sure you know about it, called, written by a guy named Ignatius Donnelly. He published a book back in 1882 called Atlantis, the Antediluvian World. It's an interesting book. I've actually got a copy. I've read some of it. And it talks in there, he talked about that Atlantis had actually established colonies in Peru, Egypt, and elsewhere, and it represented the original religion of the Atlanteans, which includes sun worship.
Yes,
fascinating.
And again, the you know, every civilization in the world, every high civilization of the world, in every continent, whether it was the Americas, certain parts of Africa, Europe, specifically, mm-hmm. let's say Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Egypt, Israel, the Middle East, Persia, India, China, Japan, so on,
mm-hmm.
even Polynesia.
Right.
There were always aspects to the sun, and
mm-hmm.
my father believed that it was much more than worship of the sun. It was
It
was utilizing the energy of the sun, gaining information and knowledge from the light and the intelligence within sunlight.
Hmm. You know, maybe worship is the wrong word to use, but utilizing it as a way for enlightenment and ascension.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
One of the things that I realized in going over this information was that how fascinating, I'm sure all of us have had almost mystical experiences when you watch the sun go over the ocean, mm-hmm. sunset, or when it rises in the morning. That is a special moment for anyone. Now, we haven't seen the sun much around here for 6 months.
Right.
But I know it's there.
Yeah, it's there.
It's there.
It's there. And, you know, the beautiful thing about the sun is whether you see it or not, the energy, the cosmic or the higher energy beyond the physical aspect of sunlight is still streaming through.
Right.
I mean, a cloud cannot stop that kind of energy.
Right.
It's
exactly.
still here. It's
exactly.
still here.
Exactly. Well, one of the things that I've learned from my own metaphysical studies is that there's 12 dimensions. With the 12th dimension being the supreme being or God, whatever, that created all of this. We exist here on the third, but as you go higher in the dimensions, we basically become in the sixth and higher, in higher dimensions, you become light bodies.
Right.
And so what you talk about, the utilization of the energy from the sun really resonated with me because I said, you're right.
Yeah.
And as the planet right now is undergoing a tremendous shift into the higher frequencies, I interviewed Robert Perella, a wonderful gentleman, during my previous hour, and we were talking about, Gene, how for thousands of years the Schumann resonance of the planet had been at 7.8 hertz. Then in last September it jumped almost doubled to 13.7. Then Christmas time it went all the way up to 36, dropped down to 32. Now, as of a couple of weeks ago, went up to 40.
Mm.
And I was told last year that by several psychics that once it passed 20 hertz, then we were on an irrevocable course toward shifting into the higher fifth dimension.
Right.
Yeah, the whole planet.
It's interesting that you mentioned the fifth dimension. We have a similar concept in cosmology
mm-hmm.
about varying dimensions, and we teach that there are nine.
Okay.
And that's fine. It's maybe all semantics, but
sure.
that there are other dimensions and that the complexities of divine worlds and physical worlds
mm-hmm.
are exactly that, complex.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about the fifth dimension in cosmology as being the worlds of light,
mm-hmm.
The fourth dimension being the worlds of darkness, and then the third dimension being the world in which we exist, which is really a combination of the two, is the duality of physicality in that there is good and bad, light and darkness.
Sure.
And so on and so forth.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's fascinating. One of the things I ran across, too, is that your dad in a book, or what's called the Essene document, claimed that the Essene sun-gazed in order to communicate with God, which I thought was fascinating. Could you tell me a little bit about that book?
I can. As many of your listeners may know, the Essenes are credited with authoring the Dead Sea Scrolls, and which were found in the 1940s, after the Second World War. And the Essenes were a sect of Judaism at the time of Jesus. They were concentrating on God's light and emphasized that the sacrifice that was going on in the temple was actually displeasing to the true God. That God was not looking, the true God being, they differentiated between the creator God or the demiurge, as the Gnostic Christians later called the creative force. But that their emphasis, that the only sacrifice that God required was a pure heart, and that the sacrifice of any living thing was an abomination. And so he taught, or at least he wrote, my father, that is, in the book, the Assai document, that this order, that the Essenes were an order of mystics, of solar adepts, who were using sunlight, and that Jesus was a member of this order, and that this order had been in conflict with the temple priests for centuries. There is reference to, I believe it's Josephus or one of the other ancient historians of the time, talk about a teacher of righteousness that came about 170 years before Jesus, who was a member of this order and who was also killed for contradicting the authority of the priests.
Sure.
And so it's a very interesting book. I would encourage people can find it on Amazon, I'm sure.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Now, you had a mystical experience here, didn't you? Last year?
I did.
You were, don't mind me telling people about this.
No, please.
You'd undergone some surgery in a hospital, and you went out to the garden in the hospital, and you had what kind of mystical experience, and who did you meet during this experience?
Well, I have been practicing my father's teachings, the system of Christology, ever since I was a child. And so, you know, having mystical experiences is not something new to me. I think that I think everybody, quite honestly, has mystical experiences from time to time. And so I had been diagnosed a little over a year ago with chronic liver disease. And it had gotten to a point where I was not expected to live.
Oh, wow.
And by a chain of very fortunate events, you could call them miracles or blessings, however you want to term that, I was able to get a liver transplant very quickly. But, you know, besides the expertise of the doctors and the good fortune that I encountered, I do believe, before I tell you about my experience, that the power of thought, the power of prayer, however the listener wants to put the intention of that, is very, very important and is real. I could feel people hundreds of miles away. I could feel their loving thoughts being directed at me. And that was an accompaniment to these fortunate events that happened with the doctors and receiving this new liver, which was a gift.
Gene, I don't mean to stop you there,
sure,
my friend, but I'd like to, if you don't mind, could I ask all my listeners around the world to send you lots of love and healing energy to your new liver now?
Please, thank you.
Okay, I'd like to ask everyone just have one moment of silence and send lots of love and light to Gene, my guest today. Wonderful. Okay, I can feel it coming into you now. Wonderful. But please continue.
Thank you very much. Thank you, listeners. Appreciate it.
Sure.
And so, but one of the things that I was able to experience was, you know, with my practice with solar viewing ever since I was a child, I was insistent. The only thing that I insisted in the hospital, otherwise I was a good boy. I was a good patient. I listened to everything the doctors and the nurses told me to do. But one thing I had to insist on was I knew that I could get my energy by going outside for 15 or 20 minutes every day.
Sure.
And in beautiful Southern California, where the sun does shine, I was able to do that on a daily basis. And it did help me. It did help me just that 15, 20 minutes. The nurses were kind enough to do that for me.
Good.
And This one afternoon, I was able to use certain techniques and powers of projection where you actually project yourself, your being, into the center of the sun.
Okay.
The idea being that you are trying to get beyond the physical aspect of the sun to a world or to worlds beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard about it. We teach it. My father talked about it often. He had experienced it on many, many occasions and actually became quite adept at it.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the first time that I had been able to do that. And maybe it was because I was fighting for my life. But I was able to project myself into the sun and witness a scene that I had never seen before. And these were angelic beings, is the best way I can put them.
Mm-hmm.
They were not looking at me. They were not speaking to me. They were not speaking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
They were luminous.
Mm-hmm.
They were full of light.
Mm.
Their form was human-like. I did not discern specific facial features.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going about their work, whatever it was, but the closest thing that I can align it to is, if any of your listeners have been to Japan or watched programs on Japanese culture,
mm-hmm.
I've been to Japan 5 times. And
beautiful country.
It is a beautiful country.
Such beautiful people, yeah.
And but as you know, the Japanese do everything with precision. Everything,
mm-hmm.
every movement, every act,
mm-hmm.
is done with an intention, and it means something. Maybe to us,
sure,
it doesn't mean anything.
Sure,
to the Westerner, but
mm-hmm.
to them, it means something. So I was watching this scene, and I didn't know what they were doing,
mm-hmm.
but I was observing,
mm-hmm.
and so that was my experience. It lasted for a moment. Of course, I believe that in those dimensions, there is no space or time.
That's
so
right.
I was able to. It was as if I was looking through a window or a portal into a different world. I don't know if they noticed me.
Oh, they did. I'm sure they did. Yeah, they opened up the doors for you.
But they did open up their doors.
Did you meet your dad on the other side in that experience?
Not at that moment.
Okay.
I have had periodic dreams of him since he passed away 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And there are never words exchanged, usually in these encounters between the two of us, which happen rarely, not often.
Sure.
But usually he's smiling, or he's got a certain gesture or facial feature that I recognize, that are recognizable to me.
Sure.
So I can tell by the dream if he's happy with me or maybe not so much.
Yeah.
And so, but anyway, this particular dream a few weeks after my liver transplant was very profound in that he actually spoke.
Uh-huh.
And he came up to me and embraced me and gave me a kiss on the cheek,
mm-hmm.
and looked at me with his big, glowing eyes,
mm-hmm.
and a big smile on his face, and he said, "You made it, son. I knew you could do it."
Oh, excellent. That's great. That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
One of the things, too, I want to go back to the sun here.
Yes.
Now, as a kid, well, mm-hmm. 30, 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
the sun, like, looked different. And maybe it's because of all the chemtrail programs sprayed here in the United States and elsewhere. But the sun looked different. I mean, it was more of a golden picture of color. And nowadays, the sun looks whitish. And I can't tell again whether the chemtrails are altering that or whether this is high-intensity frequency that's coming in. Do you know, have any thoughts on that? I'd love to ask you.
Well, my opinion would be that the color of the sun, I do agree with you. The sun was a milder when I was growing up.
Right.
Now, in the desert, we are used to very intense sun.
Sure, right.
It's a lot different in the high mountains of the desert where we are in Nevada,
right.
rather than on the coast of, let's say, the West Coast.
Right.
And so we're used to intense, brilliant sun. I would say that the whiter that the sun, the color of the sun becomes, though, is really intense. More intense consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And I agree with you in that we are living in this age. I believe, quite honestly, that we as human beings, members of the human family, are quite privileged and should feel privileged to be living in this time,
mm-hmm.
in spite of the chaos and the turmoil and the darkness that we see around us.
Sure.
But we are living in this time that the ancients, the prophets of old, and all the spiritual masters were yearning for. this time. They predicted this time.
Mm-hmm.
It was not available to them.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew that it would be available to mankind at some point in the future, and I believe this is the time.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I wanted to ask, this is a question I wanted to get you thinking about now to wrap up the interview later when we finish, but how can people make this world a better place in terms of trusting their own intuition, of using your concepts of meditation, through looking at the sun and meditating? One of the interesting things that I ran across, and I think I'll try to do it myself if I can get up early in the morning, is that Native Americans would meditate at sunrise and sunset.
Yes.
With the sun going down.
Correct.
And they said that was a very important time.
It is.
And I'd love your thoughts on that. I think that's a...
We teach the same thing in Kosology, that the two most important times, primarily is sunrise,
okay.
Secondarily is sunset.
Okay.
And if you divide the day up into a spectrum of the rainbow,
right,
you are getting your high purples in the morning.
Okay.
And if you look at any diagram of chakras, in Kosology we teach that there are eight because we include indigo.
Mm-hmm.
So we teach that there are eight chakras, but the higher fields are the higher colors, the purples and the blues.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lower chakras are your reds and yellows and oranges. So that is what you're going to find later on in the day. What we try to teach our students at Kosology is that you want to inflect. We teach inflection and reflection. So you're actually taking in the qualities, the positive qualities of sunlight in the morning, and then in the sunset, you are sending your positive qualities back to the universe.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a circulation, really, of energy, of morning and night. For those of us who have been in the system and looking at the sun for long periods of time, which I have for almost 50 years now, to glance at the sun for a couple of minutes, for a minute or two at high noon is not hard for me to do, although I don't recommend it for the novice.
Right, because you could end up seriously damaging
your eyes. We are very careful, and we had developed a system my father developed a system over much trial and tribulation to make this practice extremely safe for everyone.
Okay, that's interesting. Can we do it in Seattle here, even when we have cloudy weather?
I believe you can.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, it's pretty cloudy here. There's also something called sun yoga and solar yoga. Have you heard about that?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, what does that involve? Doing yoga at certain times when the sun's rising or setting?
Well, my interpretation of yoga is that a lot of the Eastern philosophies, and indeed the mystical Christian church hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago, before we got, let's say, too bogged down in dogma.
Sure.
The idea is to settle the mind. It's to get all the mundane and secular thoughts out of your mind before you engage in a solar practice. And so that's what I think that solar yoga was. The Buddhists and the Hindus have similar practices of quieting the mind, whether you call it meditation or doing Tai Chi or anything like that, is to expel these really silly thoughts that we all have all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Expel them from your mind before you engage in your spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens a lot of times today, not with everybody, but with a lot of people, is that they still their mind, but then they don't take the next step.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. I have to ask you too. I brought Gene on my television show on Wednesday, and we talked about pollution and respect for the planet. Could you talk about that, please? I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
I have to agree with all of the environmentalists out there. I think that caring. What we learn in Kosology is, first of all, benevolence, compassion, love, goodness, but also caring and respect. And not only to respect ourselves, but those around us and the planet, all living things, is very similar to the Jainist concept. It's very hard for people in the modern world to live like that, and certainly we do not live like that in this, in our teaching of Christology. Mm-hmm. But respecting the planet is especially important. I don't believe that any of the ancient civilizations disrespected the planet that they inherited. They think they revered it, whether you were even a Roman, an ancient Roman.
Right.
They had respect for mountains. They had respect for springs. Nature, with the varying gods of those days, represented really natural forces, natural and supernatural forces.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier, I've read this in your materials too, Gene, that you talked about that in the future that you'd like to have all religions basically, that all religions are basically the path, the same path to the Supreme Being, to spiritual enlightenment, the different ways to do it. And I'd love to have you talk about that as well.
Sure.
Like the Baha'is. I've heard about the Baha'is where they believe kind of the same kind of cosmology.
It's a universal concept, I believe, that what we teach, and maybe for your listeners I'll use a Western term, if we talk about Christ as being an office, let's say an office, and there have been people in time in history who have held that office. It could have been the Buddha. It could have been Lord Krishna. It could have been Zoroaster or Lao Tzu. That these people, including Jesus, were holders of a sacred office that is of divine origin. So the spiritual practices that they introduced into the world only differed really substantially based on their culture, the culture in which they were born, and the time at which they were born. Essentially, the teaching is the same. So if you can accept that the teachings are the same, but religion has to also evolve. Spirituality is in a constant state of evolution. And I don't believe that any tradition, any spiritual or religious tradition, can be stagnant or stuck in the past.
Right.
So while we do respect and revere the past and the teachers of the past, we must be moving forward. And we are living, as I mentioned just a moment ago, in this very special time where if all the ancient traditions were rooted in a solar practice, then we can all come together as a universal, unified force. That would be what I would offer right now.
Sure, sure. There's something very interesting you said earlier. When the sun first comes up, there's a lot of purples and blues.
Right.
And then later during the day, then the reds and other colors come in. From a spiritual perspective, I know that purples mean if your soul color is purple, then you're interested in new and different things and acquiring knowledge. And that fits in with meditation early in the morning, because if you've got mostly purple coming in, then you've got a tie into the Supreme Being to get that new knowledge coming in. The second interesting thing you said was that there's also blues. Now, blues relate to a person's soul purpose. And as a psychic, whenever I do a soul reading and someone says, well, I love blue, deep blue, I personally like blue, that's my color, and that secondarily is purple. Blue, especially deep blue, is your soul purpose.
Right.
So that makes perfect sense.
It does.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we put an emphasis on blues as well, because in our system, the heart center or the heart chakra for us is blue.
Absolutely. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. What kind of society do you think we'll have in 10 years, 5 or 10 years?
A society. Well, the society is ever evolving, and obviously at a much more rapid pace than it ever has in the past. I try to tell my children, I'm the proud father of 5 daughters.
Wow, great.
The oldest one being 19 and the youngest being 4. And I try to tell them what life was like before they were born. And it's amazing how quickly things have changed, even in the last decade.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So I can only imagine what it's going to be in the next decade. I think technology definitely has its benefits. I remember my father telling me, he used to say, son, people talk about the good old days. Now, remember, he was a child of the Great Depression.
Sure.
And was in the Second World War. And he said, believe me, they weren't that good. Yeah. He said, I'll take today any day of the week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with that. I think we're going to be going into the future as the planet continues to ascend and people ascend along with it, Gene, that we're becoming those light bodies you talk about.
I agree. It's to me, yeah. I mean, it's really getting back to, as you and I discussed on your television program, it's getting back to our origins. There is some innate urge within the human being to return to origins. Why are people always so interested, for instance, of their ancestry? Everybody wants to know where they came from.
Sure, right.
And that's
right.
on a physical level. But on a spiritual level, we also want to return to our origins, where we came from.
Right, exactly.
So it's a reaching for these higher realms, I think, that has been happening for obviously thousands of years.
I have to tell you, too, I want to thank Robert Roy, your friend from the Navajo tribe nation that referred me to you. And I'm going to be having Robert of Two Feathers on my show a week from today.
Well, I do appreciate him putting me in contact with you. Thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. What about as people advance toward these light beings, do you think illness will be less of a issue in the future because our physical bodies won't be as important?
Well, that is definitely a goal. As we all know, the physical body and just physical matter is impermanent, and we have a lot of challenges in today's world with keeping our bodies healthy.
Right.
I believe.
Right.
I think it's a lot. It's easier in some ways, but it's also harder because of the chemicals and things that people didn't have to deal with in olden times, but we have opportunities to have longer lifespans. I think if we're fortunate enough to, most people don't perish when they're 35 or 40 years old, as they did 1,000 years ago.
Right, right.
And I believe that in due time, healing and the light will definitely impact physical life in a beneficial way, and that we will be healed. The whole concept is that not only we as individuals are healed, but the planet is healed, and most importantly, the universe itself.
In most human civilizations outside of this planet, according to my friends, benevolent extraterrestrial friends, Gene, off-planet, they live an average of 1,000 years. Some humans in the Andromeda Galaxy live 3,000 years. Others in the Ceres, part of the Ceres race, live up to 25 to 50,000 years. Then they can flip-flop. They become light beings at will. They don't have to take a physical form if they don't want to, and they actually live in the fourth and fifth dimensions and much higher dimensions. And I think we're on our path to that. And that's why I appreciate your work so much, because you're opening up something what many people probably take for granted, the sun. Sunlight.
I say it all the time, and with all due respect to people that have objects that they worship or admire, and certainly we all have them. But if you were to take, for instance, all of the statues of the saints or the masters, and again, I say this with all due respect, but if you were to take them and they were all to, in a moment, vanish from the planet, the world would still continue on as it is at this very moment.
Right.
But if you extinguish the source of life, which is the sun, within a matter of minutes, all life ceases. And so that is, I think, where we need to turn our attention to, is the source of life, which then will lead us back to our origin, our divine origin.
Have you projected yourself into the sun since that time?
Oh, yes.
Okay. What's it like? Have you been able to see into the future?
I don't know if I will have that gift sometime in the future. I will tell you, I don't have perhaps that gift refined. I do have premonitions or intuitions on things.
Okay.
I think we are, you know, we are in for some turmoil, some added disruptions. I think that there is a great battle being waged in cosmic realms between light and darkness. And I believe that light will ultimately prevail. And if we are a reflection of what happens in heavenly realms or spiritual realms, then we are also experiencing a battle in a way down here.
I'm sure your dad studied this or previously, but there's a friend of mine named Alfred Weber, a wonderful an attorney, but also has a lot of knowledge about extraterrestrials up in Vancouver, beautiful Vancouver, Canada. And I was just reading some of his materials in preparation for today's interview that he said that up until last year, we had 360 years of darkness, according to the Mayan calendar. And beginning last year, now we're going to have 360 years of light.
Right.
That's why your work is so important.
Right.
And he also said that the old systems of politics and the corruption are crumbling.
Yes.
And they're being replaced. Well, the first part of that process is a time of truth, that things that are true will become truer and those that are false will crumble and fall by the wayside.
I agree with that.
And as we go into the higher dimensions, I know that from talking to my spirit friends on the other side, if you go into the fifth dimension and higher, a good psychic that can go into the fifth dimension, you get nothing but truth. And nothing, you can't hide anything.
Correct.
But I think that we're moving rapidly as this planet moves into the higher dimensions where it'll be very difficult to hide anything. And for example, I'll give you an example. I think within 10 years from now, when you have a court trial, either a civil or a criminal matter, and somebody, let's say somebody's getting prosecuted for a crime or getting sued in a civil suit, it's going to be very difficult, impossible for them to hide the truth because the jury's going to be sitting there and the judges, they're going to be able to read the minds of that person like good psychic does now and see the truth instantaneously because they've raised to the point where it's going to be just, you're telling the truth or not. And it'll be impossible for anybody to commit to do anything wrong to anybody because it's self-evident. It's like running away from God.
I wish that were true now, but I would look forward. I do look forward to that day. I think that Ted, you're absolutely right. That we have, you know, the paradigm is shifting. Maybe it's already shifted. We believe that, as I've mentioned to you on several occasions, that we are in a heightened level of consciousness. Intense energetic forces are at work, and there is no escape.
Right.
And so we either work with them, we either learn to adapt, we either learn to grow, or we know what the alternative is if we don't adapt and if we don't grow and if we don't evolve. So the paradigm has shifted, and all things will change.
Right.
And the things that are real will remain, as you just said, and the things that are false or no longer of any use will disappear.
Will fall by the wayside.
Absolutely.
I mentioned this during my first hour, but I want to mention it again because it fits in perfectly with what you've said today, Gene, that there was a famous man named Dr. Masaru Emoto. He passed away, unfortunately, back a couple of years ago, 2014. But he said that everything was hado, everything was vibration and frequency. And so if your frequency is off, for example, that's the main cause of any kind of spiritual or physical problem. And he would use these what he called hado machines to correct people's vibrational frequency and bringing into higher alignment. He was very successful in what he did. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, I'll be asking your friend Robert Roy of Two Feathers next Friday about this, but when he uses his treatment, he's a famous, is he a Hopi a medicine man? Or
I know he does have
a Navajo?
Well, he does have Native American ancestry, and I don't want to be incorrect in stating one it is.
Sure, that's fine. That's fine. Okay.
He is a French Canadian by birth.
Okay.
And I know that he's very proud of whichever
tribe
he is a part of.
Sure, sure. But he has a special healing formula that he uses for cancer, and it's very successful.
Yes.
And it's based upon, he says, from a Navajo medicine man.
I have known Robert for over 30 years, mm-hmm. and I am familiar with his formula, and it does work.
Mm-hmm.
And he is able to, it does definitely have healing qualities to it.
Wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure you'll explore that with him next week on the show.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I was at, because he spoke highly about you, and I'm so glad you're here, because he told me about you and have you on the show.
Thank you.
I'll bring this next week, but Does the two feathers, does that change the vibration or frequency of a person's body?
Well, I'm sure, yeah. I mean, any medicine does.
Right. Right.
I mean, every medicine, whether it's the traditional medicines, I'm assuming that some medicines lower frequency, so then it's not really medicine.
Right.
Because I look at medicine as being, is healing.
Right.
So if it's healing, you're obviously changing the frequency. That is really the whole point of kosology, is to change the frequency, first of all, of the body,
mm-hmm.
of your light body, you know, to get you to a state, to get one to a state of resonating on a higher level,
mm-hmm.
at a higher level. If there is a group of people around the world, it doesn't have to be a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A small number of people can vibrate and at an increased rate and do amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely that is very important to bring the frequency and the vibration up, which
right.
I think, as you mentioned, is already happening.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
We believe that a lot of that is due to the sun,
mm-hmm.
and these cosmic forces, these non-worldly, or at least not this worldly, forces that are at play. And again, with the reciprocation, as I was mentioning, with the morning sun and the sunset, it's the same thing with this consciousness. While it is streaming down and really gracing us,
mm-hmm.
then we must embrace that, but also, as someone would give you a hug, you send goodness back to that person.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can embrace it and send it also back to the planet and to the solar system, the universe, it will go beyond the third dimension into other dimensions as well.
I think that your dad is part of, and you have your dad as part of your spiritual guides, as well as the entities on the other side of the sun who are helping you with your work, and they're very happy and proud of you for that, for enlightening people, because it's kind of like air and water. People take air for granted, but we
mm-hmm.
have pollution problems.
Mm-hmm.
People take some people even take water for granted.
Right.
Water, good, clean water is scarce in many parts of the world.
Nevada is one of them.
Oh, really? Interesting.
We're one of the driest states in the country.
Really?
But getting back to water, though, that's a good point that you bring that up.
Yeah.
Because the ancients looked at water as the physical a symbol of light.
Really?
Which is why I think it's interesting, as Dr. Emoto mentioned, and I might say that our we have a community, a branch of kosology in Japan.
Uh-huh.
And one of my dear friends who has been in our kosology community for decades
mm-hmm.
is Japanese, and he was a good friend of Dr. Emoto.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So he is associated with the Emoto group and the people over there, but also has been practicing kosology since the 1970s.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
What's his name, by the way?
His name is Yukinori Matsushita.
Okay.
Matsushita.
Okay, thank
yes.
you.
Uh-huh.
My trip again to Japan, I'll try to look him up. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me a call.
Okay, I will.
Maybe we'll go together.
Well, that would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Where are they based? Are they based in Tokyo or?
They are in the southern part of Japan in Kurume, which is a little bit outside of Fukuoka.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm actually going there in, I think, about 3 weeks. Four,
you are?
4 weeks.
Interesting.
Yeah,
will
I go every other year.
Will you be giving presentations there?
I will.
Huh.
Yeah.
I heard Fukuoka is a beautiful area.
It is. It's all of Japan is.
Uh-huh.
I
uh-huh.
really enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
Especially if you like sushi.
Well, I do. Well, this is fascinating because, you know, I've had many shows on the Emoto Project, the Emoto Office, Emoto Peace Project, and of course that's all about water. I haven't had any shows yet on air, but maybe I should. And now we've got light.
There you go.
Now we have one on sunlight, which is something I think many people just take it.
I think they do.
Take for granted.
It's too bad.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah.
That brings me to another point. We've got about probably about 7 or 8 minutes left, Gene, and I have to ask you about this. The chemtrail programs being done by our U.S. government, which nobody's agreed to, but they just do it, how has that affected the sunlight? And because I've got some ideas I wanted to share with you on that.
Well, I'm not too familiar with it. I've heard of it, but to
be
honest with you, I'm not too familiar with it, so I don't want to misspeak.
Sure.
I don't advocate tampering. You know, man has manipulated nature to a certain degree through the use of science. I think a lot of that has been very beneficial.
Uh-huh.
And I think some of it is quite dangerous.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I think when we start blocking out things like sunlight, I think it's a wrong intention.
Sure.
I think it's a flawed intention. It may be well-intentioned, but it's wrong.
Sure.
And
sure.
It's going to backfire.
Sure.
It's going to backfire because I don't think there's really anything that's going to be stopping this light coming through.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's one thing that I know there's has been some speculation about the chemtrails. The chemtrails generally are made up of about four or five different elements, including barium, strontium, aluminum, and sulfur, and some titanium that I know about. The aluminum causes Alzheimer's disease in people by splitting the two frontal lobes.
Mm.
The sulfur makes it hotter than it should be. The barium and strontium causes stillbirths in many, many children. I know where I used to live in eastern Washington, in Moses Lake, Washington, they had a very high breast cancer rate there with Alzheimer's and all kinds of other health problems, bronchitis, just from the chemtrails which were being sprayed. But more importantly, but also importantly too, it's an attempt, I think, by some sectors of the government to hide the sun. And if in fact a lot of this new light energy is coming from the sun to raise our frequencies, perhaps it's an attempt through chemtrails to decrease the evolution in the higher dimensions which are coming into this planet. I don't know. That's just speculation.
Well, if that's so, the way that I would look at it is that it's, if there's a cosmic battle of light and darkness going on, which is manifesting here on the planet,
right,
then the powers of darkness, whatever they may be, I don't say whomever, but whatever they may be,
right,
will use whatever means they can to manipulate in certain situations.
Right.
And so I think it's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. I know when I was driving down to Mount Shasta last year, beautiful morning, one morning at about 6:30, the sun was just coming over the mountain, but you could see at least a dozen different chemtrail streaks across the sky. They're not contrails. Contrails are different because they disappear, but chemtrails.
Mm.
And then many of the forests around Mount Shasta are dying now because they've got aluminum exposure.
Mm.
And even the city council in Shasta and the county has passed resolutions against it, but it still goes on.
Well, it's unfortunate if that's the case, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
We are very fortunate in our, as I mentioned, Reno is our headquarters for Cosology, or at least our base of operations, our center.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 1,200 acres of beautiful sanctuary.
Oh, nice.
Lands.
Nice.
North of Reno.
Uh-huh.
And so we are able to, Reno is not that populated, so we have good clean air.
Uh-huh.
And good snow mountain water, and so on and so forth. So we get some magnificent sunrises.
Wonderful.
There.
Wonderful. Now, you also have a facility that uses retreat called Steamboat Springs.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes, Steamboat Hot Springs. Yes,
great.
Indeed.
Great.
It's a historic location. It's been there since the old Comstock days of the 1860s when Virginia City, which is very close to Reno, was one of the big silver areas in the world. Unfortunately, the people that struck it rich took all their money and built San Francisco and left us to struggle.
Oh, no. That's too bad. That's too bad. That's too bad. Well, what I've loved about your interview today, Gene, is that you put a spotlight, so to speak, on something that people don't even think about, the sunlight, especially, as a way for, that the ancients used it as a way for going into the higher dimensions. And you also had an interesting point about how we are all light beings, and we are now progressing, I think, into those higher dimensions. For those of you just tuning in, this is Ted Marr with Out of This World Radio. I've got a wonderful gentleman named Gene Savoy on my show. And Gene, I wanted to give you the rest of the time to wrap up your wonderful interview today. We've got about a minute left.
Well, Ted, thank you again for having me on the show. It's been very pleasant to be up here in the Seattle area and see so many clouds.
But it's all right.
But no, I do appreciate it. And yes, if people would just realize that we are in this era of consciousness, it is real. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I think that you and I are just talking about hypothetically.
Right.
I think that it is real, mm-hmm. and we need to connect. Mm-hmm. That people need to connect with this. Stop, mm-hmm. stop talking about it. Let's do something with it.
Right.
Let's work with it.
Right.
It's not going to just miraculously, mm-hmm. it's benefiting us, but we have to reciprocate.
Right.
I think that's the main point, that humanity has to reciprocate with this very divine power, the spiritual power that is coming down to us.
And I think as we ascend into the higher dimensions in this evolutionary change, our bodies will become less important as we become light bodies, Gene. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Their website again is www.cosolargy.org. And I want to thank everyone so much for listening today, Gene, and have a beautiful weekend, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye, and have a great weekend.